Thank you so much, Rabbi Kamenetsky. The truth is, if you weren't a Rebbe, a mentor, a teacher of mine, I would have interrupted you and tried to cut you off long ago. It's already the late hour, and I certainly heard more than enough. If my mother were listening, I would have let you go on, but she's not here, so it certainly wasn't worth it. But thank you for your exaggerated compliments. And the truth is that both in my childhood and in my adult life, I continue to look up to Rabbi Kamenetsky. As he mentioned, our families are incredibly close for now many generations, Baruch Hashem, and only continuing further. And I've always looked up to you, and I thank you. It's a great schus, a great opportunity for me to be here. And I thank you. What you've built and what you're doing and your reputation continues to inspire me and so many others. I also want to thank my dear friend Rabbi Storch for many years for this invitation and for coordinating all of this. And to see so many friends. Zoom is such a bracha. Those who have the courage to have their cameras on, and those who have reason not to, we thank you not to. But those who have the courage to have your cameras on, it's great to see dear friends, Rabbi Yudin, Rabbi Englander, I see Shimmy's here, I see others. So it's great to be together tonight. And I thank you for giving me a few minutes to share some thoughts. As we're really on the precipice of Shavuos, we're going to be standing at the base of the mountain together. We're going back. Shavuos is not recalling or recounting something historic. It's not simply trying to relive something from thousands of years ago, but Kabbalah Satorah is in the present. It's very real. We are counting up towards when we'll be standing at the base of the mountain, and no quarantine and no pandemic and no stay home order can cause us to not be at the mountain together. And even if physically we'll be distanced, but spiritually we'll be standing as one, Vayichan Sham Yisrael, we're going to be there together, and it's really the time to prepare. We're running out of those days, and we're running out of that time, not commemorating the past, but living and experiencing it in the present. Back in the day, today we have iPhones, we download apps on our phone right away, but I remember I used to have one of the earlier versions before the smartphone. What was it called? The Trio? You'd plug it in and download your calendar. You felt so cool. You had all your information on it, and there were texts. They took up like 90% of the memory of your poor device at the time, but you could download the Torah. You could download the Chumash to walk around, the Jew in your pocket with the whole Chumash, the whole text of the Torah. So I'll never forget when you would download it, you connected it to your computer and you dialed up your speed, your dial-up internet, and you would download it. It took 4 days straight for it to download and load onto your device. But I'll never forget when I pressed download, a little screen popped up and it said, "Do you accept the Torah?" Whatever text it was, it would say, "Do you accept?" You know, the latest novel. "Do you accept the Torah?" I just remember it threw me off because I looked at that and I said, "Huh, do you accept the Torah?" And that's really the question that we're all facing as we stand at the base of the mountain together. Do you accept the Torah? Do you accept it? Do we accept it collectively, nationally, as a people, as a community? But also, and even much more difficult, as individuals, do we accept the Torah? The Torah's supremacy in guiding our life, in governing our life, and regulating everything from when we wake up until the moment we fall asleep? Does it inform and inspire our view, our attitude, the way we see the world? And the metric or the barometer to answer those questions is to ask ourselves, do we dedicate time to learning Torah? So you talk about preaching to the choir. It's 9:15 at night on a Thursday night, the end of a long week. And here you are on Zoom, not even in person. We're here to learn Torah together. So Baruch Hashem, we can answer in the affirmative. We're here, we're committed to learn Torah. But what I really want to examine in our time tonight is why? Why learn Torah? This beautiful institution, this incredible yeshiva, DRS, filled with so many passionate and devoted Talmidim to learning Torah, not just in the school hours, not just during the requirements, but how many of you, the summers, when you were able and Mirtz Hashem soon will be able again to dedicate to extra learning? Why are we doing it? What are we trying to get out of it? Is it intellectual gymnastics? We spend hours on end with these huge volumes of books, postulating and pontificating and analyzing and dissecting and debating and suggesting and rejecting. Why? Why? Your peers, your age, and frankly, my peers and the peers of your parents who are here tonight as well, they're not opening American legal books and pontificating and analyzing. Nobody in this virus is drawing strength from opening up American law or British law or any law and reading and finding strength in it. So why are we doing it? What are we trying to get out of it? What I want to do tonight is examine five separate, overlapping, but five separate reasons of why we learn Torah. Because why? Can't I do mitzvahs? I have 613 mitzvahs, so do the mitzvahs. Be a good Jew. Eat kosher, don't gossip, don't look at the wrong thing, be honest in business. Daven in the times we're meant to daven. Just do your mitzvahs. Why when it's a choice between watching sports or a little bit more learning? Why when it's a choice between a shluff on the couch or opening a sefer? Why when it's a choice between turning on talk show or the news or turning on a shir? Why do we place such an emphasis on learning Torah? Can't I be a good Jew? Can't I be a God-fearing Jew, a mitzvah-observing Jew without learning Torah? What am I meant to be getting out of it? Why are we doing this? And I have to tell you, for me, it's such a fundamental question, and it's a question I'm sure your outstanding Rebbeim, some of them, I'm so humbled and honored, are here tonight, but all of them have probably examined with you. But my educational background, nothing to do with the outstanding schools that I went to, it just wasn't spoken of at the time, ever pressed pause and said, hold the Gemara, hold the Chumash, hold the Navi, hold the Halacha, hold the Hashkafa. Let's spend a few moments of talking about why. Why aren't you outside in the court? Why aren't you at recess? Why aren't you in the stock club? What is the value and what is the merit of learning Torah? Five quick reasons. Number one. Reason number one. There's a rare psychological disorder. It affects less than 1% of the population. And yet it seems to be extremely prevalent in our community. Of course, I mean symbolically. And that is what's called multiple personality disorder. Maybe you relate to this. Do you ever feel like, you know, I'm someone when I'm around this group of friends, and I'm different when I'm around that group of friends, and when I'm around my family, there's a third part of my personality comes out, and when I'm in my professional environment, another part of my personality comes out, and you know, depending who I'm with, and where I am, and when it is, there are so many complementing and often competing parts of my personality that a person says, who am I really? I have so many personalities. I'm the cool guy. I'm the with it guy. I'm the frum guy. I'm the stark guy. I'm the shtickle chassidish guy. I'm the intellectual guy. I'm the entrepreneur business guy. I'm the politically astute guy. I'm a little bit of everything. Who am I? What's left in the end of the day? Who am I when we have these multiple personalities? You know, right now, we're supposed to be distancing from one another, which is an anathema. It's painful to us as Torah Jews. It goes against everything we believe. And the way that we're going to be able to regroup and come together again, here in South Florida, Baruch Hashem, we are into our phase one, and we're talking about what it would take to have minyanim outdoors, spaced apart. But everybody is acknowledging that in order to make it happen, we will have to do what? Everyone has to wear a mask. A mask. Cover the nose and mouth. Protect us from one another. Stay safe. Keep others safe. You have to wear a mask. Do you know what the Latin word for mask is? Not I'm a Latin expert, but I happen to know this. The Latin word for mask is persona. Persona. We have many different personalities, which come from the word persona. And the different personalities or parts of our personality are the different masks that we wear. The athlete, the learner, the intellect, the cool, the different parts of our persona. In Shakespearean plays, actors were donned their persona, they put on their mask for the performance. And I fear that not only are we putting on a mask for our own safety, but too many of us are wearing masks. And we have so many different masks and we're wearing them so many times that we're left not even knowing, who am I? And what is my life about? What drives me? What is my appetite? What are my ambitions? What makes me feel alive? What nourishes and what adds to my soul? A personality is a mask because I put it on and it covers my true self. The inconsistency and the conflict, it's dangerous and it's damaging the competing parts of our personality. Torah, the reason number one why we learn Torah is because Torah unmasks. Torah takes away the competing parts of who we are. Torah enables us to have the strength and the knowledge and live the ideals to not need to wear a different persona, different mask, or express a different part of our personality depending who we're with. But it unifies us. All of who I am is acting in harmony. And I can be that same person who's into politics, who's intellectual, who's emotional, who's chassidish, who's rational, who's the jock, who's the business, who's the this, who's the that. And they're not competing, but they're acting in harmony because they're all serving Torah at their center. Torah is the great unifier. It's the great uniter to my personality. It enables me to enhance and reinforce and promote the parts of my personality which are consistent with Torah, which Torah asks me to use to execute my mission in this world. And it tells me which parts of my personality are in fact counterfeit. They're inauthentic. They don't belong in my repertoire whatsoever. We all know the Avos and Imos had trouble conceiving. Tragically, they struggled with fertility. Rivka and Yitzchak were no exceptions. And they pleaded and they beseeched Hashem to have children. And finally, after conceiving, Rivka, who should be overjoyed to know she's pregnant with multiples, has a difficult pregnancy. And the pasuk says, they were active within her. She said, why me? Now, first of all, it's a very bizarre question. You've struggled with conception, with fertility, and those who are struggling, Hashem should bless them. They should know the bracha of healthy children. It's difficult. The Gemara describes, Chazal understood how painful, how alone one feels, how not alive one feels when they struggle in this way. So Rivka should have just been overjoyed. She's pregnant. Multiples? All this activity within her? So she goes to inquire of Hashem, and she goes to find out because she's agitated. What bothered her so much? So Rashi tells us from the Medrash, Vayishrotetzu abinim b'kirba, they were active. When she passed the base Medrash, she felt one kick. She passed the base Avodah Zarah, house of idolatry, she felt another kick. And what did she do? Vayitelech l'drotzot Hashem, she went to consult Hashem. Vayomer Hashem lo, Hashem told her, Shnei goyim b'vidnech, u'shnei lu'umim me'ayach yiparedu. Don't worry, there's two nations. There are two people inside you and they're going to be separated. Hashem had better vision than a 3D ultrasound. He told her exactly what's going on. And what does Rivka say? How does that help me? No. She says, oh, good. Shame. That's wonderful. I'm relieved. I'm happy. Now I know. Now I understand. So the Kli Yakar. Rav Lunshitz asks, what do you mean, now I know? And now Rivka's satisfied. What was in Hashem's answer that allayed her fear, that relieved her of her worry? So says the Kli Yakar, that before she went Lidros Hashem, before she went to check out what is happening and why is it happening, Rivka thinks that she's pregnant with one child. She thinks there's one child inside her, and this one child is suffering and struggling with multiple personality disorder. Who is this kid? He wants out in the Beis Medrash, and he also wants out in the Beis Avodah Zarah? She couldn't take the duplicity, the inconsistency, the hypocrisy. Who is this kid? Who is the real one? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, relax, it's twins, don't worry. One is going to the Beis Medrash, he's authentic, he's genuine, he's through and through, that's all he craves, that's all he wants. And the other one, Nebuch, for now, wants the Beis Avodah Zarah, you got your work cut out for you, you're going to have to work. And that's why Rivka walked away and she said, okay, I have what to work with. If each one at least is devoted and dedicated, if they know who they are and what they think their mission is, one has it right to begin with and the other is going to take a lot of work, but at least they're not a multiple personality. Says the Kli Yakar, to be fragmented and divided, to be driven in so many different directions, to be inconsistent and duplicitous. That's so inauthentic, it's so counterfeit. And by the way, it's such a source of mental health challenges. And particularly the demographic and segment of community who feel so broken and trying to fit in and try to feed the FOMO they have of everyone else who looks like their lives are so happy. And so they're simply trying to conform and mold themselves to wherever they are and with whomever they are and whatever is in to believe and do. That can't help but lead to depression and anxiety and worry because we're not being true to ourselves. There's nothing more gratifying, there's nothing more meaningful, there's nothing more enriching or uplifting than being true to who we are and who we're meant to be, than tapping into our most authentic selves. When you hear an inspiring shir that awakens something inside you, when you're part of a kumzitz or a shabbaton or a havdalah, when you witness a sunset, when you have a breakthrough on a taisvas you've been breaking your teeth over, when you make contact with your most authentic self, there's nothing more gratifying, more meaningful, more real, more lasting. Torah enables us to be consistent, to bring us together, to help us figure out who we are and who we're meant to be in a world of so much noise and so many influences, of so many images and so many ideals, and we're left not knowing, who am I? Should I be the one who read this article or who read the article that says the exact opposite? Should I be the one who heard this or the one who needs to wear that? Should I be the one who needs to listen to this music or the one who likes that? Who am I? Who am I? Torah unites us, it unifies us. Torah teaches us right from wrong, it's our moral compass. Torah tells us what actually nourishes our neshama and what damages our neshama. Torah gives us the tools and the vocabulary, the action list. It gives us an image of the best version of ourselves so we can reach and stretch and try to realize who we're meant to be. And so the first reason that we learn Torah is because of its ability to unify our personalities into one coherent, cohesive identity. You know, I don't want to look like we're just exchanging flattery, but Kamenetsky was so kind, and I know he has to go to give another shir. I hope he left already. But when I was young, and until today, one of the things I look up to about Rabbi Kamenetsky, and I know has attracted so many of you, his Talmidim, and it's true about so many of your amazing Rebbeim, is it's the same Rebbe who's in the Beis Medrash, and in the shir room, and on the basketball court. It's the same Rebbe you see at the Shabbos table, and it's the same Rebbe that you meet on Central Avenue. It's the same Rebbe. It's not a different Rebbe trying to be different or fit in differently. Rabbi Kamenetsky, growing up, had the same midos on the basketball court as he had in the Beis Medrash, and that's what earned our admiration. But it's not only him, it's every one of you, it's every one of us are capable. He became who he is and molded by Torah, and the same is true with us. With every encounter and every Torah text and every Torah lesson and every Torah shir, we discover more of who we are. The Torah we hold up to ourselves as that mirror to look into our soul and see who we can be. And that should carry us and inform us and inspire us wherever we go. Not just in the religious context, but wherever we are, when others are looking, and even in this time in which so many of us are so alone so often, even when we are, or especially when we are alone. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us that one of the incredible qualities of Torah is Torah Machsharto. And it's unclear exactly what that word means, Torah Machsharto. So if you look at the Ruach HaChaim, Reb Chaim Volozhiner's commentary on Pirkei Avos, the Ruach HaChaim writes that Torah Machsharto, the word Machsharto comes from the word kosher, to kasher. You know, if you have a pot, and the pots absorb non-kosher taste, if you, by accident, mixed and cooked meat and milk in it, or it absorbed a treif taste, you have to kasher the pot. It wasn't that long ago it was Pesach, and it wasn't that long ago there were many who never made Pesach in their entire lives. And rabbis got inundated with countless questions. How do I kasher this? How do I kasher that? It doesn't matter how many magazines and apps and lists are put out. We still got those questions. How do I kasher? How do I kasher? How do I kasher? How do I take something that has absorbed a non-kosher taste, a contaminating, impure taste, and how do I purge it? How do I get rid of it? That's what it means to kasher. That's what it means to kasher. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner says Torah Machsharto means that our eyes have taken in non-kosher images, and our ears have taken in non-kosher thoughts and ideas, and our brain is processing non-kosher values. And Torah Machsharto, how do I purge it? How do I rid it? How do I kosher my brain? How do I kosher my soul? How do I restore my innocence and my purity? How do I restore myself to my roots, to my neshama? Torah Machsharto. We kasher something treif, we purge that usher taste, and Torah Machsharto, how do we kasher our neshama through Torah? Torah is what kasher is. By the way, one of the principles in halacha is that kabolo kach polto, the same mechanism or means through which the vessel absorbed the non-kosher taste, is what you need to purge it. So, those who were part of Smichas Chaver recently learned, if you absorb through cooking, it's purged through liquid, through Hagala. If it was absorbed through heat, it's purged through fire. It's purged through heat, through Libun. So the way it's absorbed is the way it's purged, and the same has to be true, the Rebbe's point out, about the values in our lives. If we ran with enthusiasm and passion and zeal to absorb those non-kosher tastes, we quickly went to that website, we surfed, we quickly texted that juicy Lashon Hara, or we were dishonest or struggled in our test-taking or our business deals or any area of life, with whatever level of enthusiasm or passion we brought to absorbing the non-kosher taste, kibolo kach polto. That's the level of enthusiasm and zeal, of excitement, of passion, and of fire that we need in order to get rid of that taste in our lives. It's an amazing Gemara in Pesachim at Daf Samaches. The Gemara says that Rav Yosef, the great Rav Yosef, commented, if not for Torah, kama Yosef ika b'shuka. If not for the Heilige Torah, the ability to learn Torah, kama Yosef ika b'shuka. So the simple understanding is, if not for Torah, I'd be like any other Yosef, I'd be like any other Joe in the street, literally. I'd be like any other Joe in the street, if not for Torah. Torah is what gave him his prominence, his esteem. Torah is what gave him his reputation. I'd be like any other guy in the marketplace. Kama Yosef Ika Bashuka. But the Balei Musar tell us, no, don't read it Kama Yosef Ika Bashuka. I'd be like any other Joe in the street. It means if not for Torah, Kama Yosef. How many Yosefs would I be, Bashuka? I'd be the Yosef in the marketplace, and the Yosef in the mall, and the Yosef in the Beis Medrash, and the Yosef at the gym, and the Yosef at the Kiddush, and the Yosef at work, and the Yosef at home. So many different personalities that are competing and overlapping, and who's the true me? Says Rav Yosef, Baruch Hashem, thank God for Torah. If not for Torah, Kama Yosef Ika Bashuka. There would be so many parts of me, but Baruch Hashem for Torah, there's only one of me. I'm true to who I am and who I'm meant to be. I can realize the best version of myself. So Chevra, poring over that Gemara, or turning on that shir, or learning, engaging in the Mechamta Shel Torah, it helps us peel back the mask. Not the healthy one that we have to wear now to protect ourselves and others, but the personality, the mask, we're able to reveal our true character, our true sense, through the amazing conversations and the deep debates and the illuminating insights. We have the opportunity to discover who we really are and who we're meant to be, and to shape a vision for who we could become. If not for Torah, who would shape that vision? The Michael Jordan series? Do I want to be like Jordan or LeBron or Kobe? For sure, MJ is the best for all time. It's not even a debate. But who do I want to be like? This singer, this rapper, this celebrity, this athlete, this politician? Do I want to fit into this fad or that fashion? Do I want to be like this hero or that one? Kama Yosef Ika Bashuka. We wouldn't know who we're meant to be or how we're meant to behave. Instead, Torah says, take the best of them all and filter it through the prism of Torah to know what's true, what's authentic, what's real, and who we're meant to be. So the first reason that we learn Torah is because Torah gives us the tools and the vocabulary. Torah gives us the instruments to peel back the personality, the persona, the mask, and to reveal who we really are and who we're meant to come. Not just to learn Torah, to become a Ben Torah. You know, you could become a manuval who learns Torah. There are manuvalim who learn Torah. And they go on the basketball court and they compete ruthlessly and they curse like a sailor. You could learn a lot of Torah and be unethical at work. You could learn a lot of Torah and talk a lot of Lashon Hara in the back of shul. But to learn Torah, to become a Ben Torah, a Bas Torah, to be molded and shaped by Torah, to become a Torah personality, that's the first reason that we learn Torah. It's why we learn Torah. It's Torah's all about. In fact, it's the beginning of our Parsha, Bamidbar. The Torah is given Davka Bamidbar. Why all of a sudden we learn about the topography and the geography, all of a sudden we care about the climate of where Torah is given? So the Medrash Chazal tell us, because a person has to turn themselves in a Midbar to truly receive Torah. You can't impose on Torah your values and thoughts. You have to wipe your slate clean. You have to be barren like a Midbar and let Torah inform and inspire who you are and who you're meant to become. Reason number two. We recite in the Shema daily, we have a mitzvah, we have an obligation of Yahavtas Hashem Lokecha. We have an obligation to love Hashem. Love Hashem. Good. One of the 613, every one of us, men, women, adults and children, love Hashem. The question is, how do you fulfill that mitzvah? Tell me to shake a lulav, no problem. Tell me to hear the shofar, I got it. Tell me to listen to the Megillah, done. Put on the talis and tefillin, I can do it. Tell me what I could eat and don't eat, okay. Tell me about the avos malachos, I can observe Shabbos. But tell me my emotion? Love Hashem. Imagine I put two of you in a room and I say, I hereby command you, love one another. It doesn't work. It takes time. You got to fall in love. It's not even love at first sight. It's lust at first sight. Love, what is love? So all of a sudden the Torah comes along and it says, V'yahavtas Hashem Elokecha. Tells I just before this was on a Zoom bar mitzvah. Whoever thought they'd use those words in the same sentence before a couple months ago. But I was on a Zoom bar mitzvah. You tell a bar mitzvah boy, 13 years old, mazel tov, and here's your tefillin, here's how you put them on. Oh, and by the way, as of now, as of tonight, 3 stars, love Hashem. Love Hashem. How do you love? He's invisible. I can't see him, I can't feel him, I can't hear him, I can't touch him. What do you mean, love Hashem? How can the Torah tell me? You can tell me what to do. How can it tell me how to feel? This is an age-old question. There are many different answers given to it. Not our topic for tonight. But I want to share with you the Rambam says, in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, he answers that V'yahavtas Hashem Elokecha, the mitzvah to love Hashem, is not to feel an emotion at all. The mitzvah is not love the way we think of love as an everyday emotion. The mitzvah of love is to know Hashem. Because to know Hashem is to love Hashem. So the Rambam says, when a person studies about Hashem, biology, chemistry, physics, you go to the Swiss Alps and the Grand Canyon, you see, of course, the magnificence of Eretz Yisrael, when we'll be able to travel again. When you understand the science, the nature, the wonder of the world, and most of all, when you open his diary and you read his own words that he authored, and you get a glimpse into who he is and what drives him. Says the Rambam, to know God is to love God. And there's a parish on the side of the Rambam. It doesn't say who authored it. In all of our standard Mishnah Torah, it just says parish. And the parish on the side of the Rambam, Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, says, what does it mean? Know God is to love God. So he describes the two types of love. There's an ava taluya b'davar and ava she'eino taluya b'davar. There's a conditional love and an unconditional love. You know what a conditional love is? If the government sends me some nice checks because the economy shut down, I love the government. And if they stop sending me the checks or they start charging me taxes, I don't love the government. I love the people who give and I don't love the people who take. Give to me and I love you. That's a conditional type of love. It means there's nothing inherent in the relationship. There's nothing about you that draws me and that inspires me to love. It's conditional. You take care of me and reciprocally, I can't help but feel love towards you. That conditional love is inauthentic. It doesn't last as the parish. Because it depends. As long as you give me, I love you. If you stop giving me, I won't love you. That's not real love. That's not real love. You know what real love is? Is I come to know who you are, what your ideals, what drives you, what are your values, what are your priorities, what are your morals. And there's something about that that attracts me to you, that makes me fall in love. He writes, you could fall in love from a distance. It's not even a love that you have to give me anything, let alone you have to even know who I am. I can observe you and I can watch you and I can see how special you are. And that makes me want to fall in love. It makes me want to get to know you. And this parish says that's what the Rambam means in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah. Miyad Mesayiv Ava Gedol Leidas Hashem. You're going to be driven. You're going to have this insatiable appetite to come to know God. And so the very best part of ourselves, our neshama, the tzelem lakim, the chilek elokom, yima'al mamash, the part of us that is in itself an expression of God, It is connected to God when we come to know God, when we study God. So we know God through His world. We know God through His world. And you know God, if you go see these magnificent parts of nature, the natural world, the natural order, we come to see in the minutiae, in the details, in the magnificence, we come to discover the Ribono Shel Olam. We come to discover. You know, imagine you had a grandparent, a great-grandparent, who you didn't know, who passed away before you were born, and you never knew them. So there are two ways you can come to know them. You found a painting that they painted. You found a sculpture they sculpted. You found something they carved or they built with their own hands. You would cherish that, and you'd feel like, I come to know that through their creation. But then imagine you're rummaging through their attic and you find their diary, the written word. And now you can really get a glimpse and an insight into who they were. So the Rambam writes, the two ways we get to know Hashem is through His creation, through what He fashioned, what He built. But the way we know Him even more authentically, even more deeply, is His diary. The Torah HaKadosha is His sacred word. He is the one who dictated it. He authored it. And He was communicating to us. So the second reason we learn Torah is to be able to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu as best as we can know Him. We can know Him through His world, and we can know Him through experiencing the beauty and the pleasure of His world. But we know Him best and we know Him most when we study His diary. We open that Torah and we get a glimpse into who He is and His values and His vision for the way He wants the world to be. Davening is us talking to Hashem. Learning Torah is Hashem talking to us. Anyone who says, Hashem never talks to me, if only He spoke to me, then I believe. He speaks to us each and every day. He started at Har Sinai and He hasn't stopped talking to us since. Open a sefer, turn on a shir, develop a relationship with a teacher, learn His sacred Torah, and you're learning to fall in love with Him. To know Hashem is to love Hashem. That's how we fulfill the mitzvah, and it's the second reason that we learn Torah. Reason number three. A bunch of years ago, it's probably already outdated by now, I read a story about a person who owned a store at a mall, and there were teenagers lingering around the store, and they were blocking the customers from coming in. They were loud, and they were rowdy, and they were noisy, and they were loitering and littering, and he wanted them to get away from his store. So he discovered something, and ultimately they started selling it, called the mosquito ring. You know what a mosquito ring is? Mosquito tone is a 17 kilohertz sine wave that some teenagers, maybe some of you listening, if you want to know exactly the different ages of who's listening right now on this Zoom, we could play different level of kilohertz sine waves. And the older you are, the less you'll hear it. The younger you are and the more sensitive you're hearing, you'll still pick up that very high-pitched noise. So what he did is he invented and he bought and then sold to put outside your store any area that you don't want teenagers hanging out. You put this incredibly high-pitched tone that the adults won't hear and they'll be happy to be there. And only those young enough will hear. Most adults can't hear above 13 or 14. The young people can hear as much as 17. They would hear it and they'd walk away and then you'd be borrowed by it. I remember when I first read this article, I looked it up on the web. You could still do it now, mosquito tone ring, and you'll play it. And I heard nothing. And from two rooms away, my kids started screaming, "What is that? Turn that off!" Because the younger you are, only you can hear it. But if you're old, you can't hear it anymore. So there's a pasuk, very relevant. This coming week, we're going to be standing at the mountain accepting the Torah. And the first time the Torah was given, it says, "Hadvarim ha'ila dibir Hashem es kol kalchem bahar mitocha ish, ha'anan v'har rafel." It says that these words were spoken when we were gathered all together at the mountain, in the fire, the cloud. Kol gadol v'lo yasaf. It was a kol gadol, it was a great sound, v'lo yasaf. If you weren't all muted and we were together, I'd ask you all, what do the words v'lo yasaf mean? Kol gadol means a great voice, a great sound. God spoke to us, the only time in history. V'lo yasaf. What is the word v'lo yasaf mean? This was an unprecedented, unparalleled, unrepeated moment in time. So V'lo Yasaf, the Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam and others say, V'lo Yasaf means never to be duplicated, never repeated, never ever happened again. One time in all human history, Kadosh Baruch Hu the Almighty peeled back His mask, so to say, and spoke to the human being. Kol Gadol, we heard His voice directly, V'lo Yasaf, and it was never repeated. It was a one-time deal, an exceptional and transcendent moment in history, never replicated, never duplicated, never again. That's the Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam. But Unklus, Targum Unklus writes, V'lo Yasaf, not never repeated, V'lo Yasaf, state Unklus, V'lo Psak, God's voice never ended, it never ceased, it never stopped. The Ramban brings a few psukim as evidence. The Shorash Yud Samach Fei can mean never stops. And according to the Unklus, according to the Ramban, this other set of Rishonim, it means Kol Gadol, God spoke velo yasaf, he hasn't stopped since. It continues to reverberate in our ears. We continue to hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu's call even today, 3,300 years later. So I ask you, who's correct? Who's right? It's a pasuk, Kol Gadol velo yasaf. HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke, and velo yasaf. Who's right? Is it the Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam? Are they right that it was never repeated? It happened one time and never again? Or Kol Gadol velo yasaf? Is the Targum Unklus and the Ramban right that it happened once and it never stopped? And I would submit and suggest to you, my dear friends, this evening, who is right depends on each and every one of us. We determine which pshat is more correct by the way in which we live our lives. Like that mosquito tone, a frequency is playing. And the only question is, can you hear it? Is your antenna extended? Are you tuned into it? Do you have your receiver on and up? Each time we open a sefer and each time we challenge ourselves by learning Torah and by expanding and broadening our wisdom and our understanding and our insight, the voice of Hashem velo yasaf continues to reverberate and to echo in our ears. It's alive, it's dynamic, it's vibrant, it's real. We're not making contact with an ancient text. We're opening something that is new today. Every magnificent sunrise or sunset we pause to take in, HaKadosh Baruch Hu velo yasaf. He continues to reverberate in our ears and in our lives. Each act of kindness we share with others, Kol Gadol velo yasaf, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will and wisdom is reverberating in this world. Or Kol Gadol velo yasaf. However, our books remain closed and they gather dust. And our smartphones are tuned to podcasts and talk radio and news, but never to shiurim and inspiration. Then Kol Gadol velo yasaf means Torah, it's old, happened a long time ago. And so whether this coming week Shavuos for us is to commemorate something of long ago, or Shavuos is to experience something today, is velo yasaf never repeated, or velo yasaf means never ends, is all about how we live our lives. And it is the third reason we learn Torah. We learn Torah in order to continue to feel Hashem's presence, to continue to hear His messages in a contemporary way, maybe to give it a new vocabulary, contemporary terms, but it is ancient and timeless wisdom for today. When we engage Torah, we keep that conversation with Him alive. We keep it going. You can be an observant Jew, scrupulous in halacha, but Har Sinai is an ancient part of history. Only if you continue to challenge to learn Torah does Har Sinai become part of a continued experience. And it's reason number three why we learn Torah. Reason number four. What defines a good person? Again, if we were in person and you weren't muted, I would be asking you, what is the definition of a good person? Are you a good person? What makes a good person? What is the measure of a person? Are you ethical, moral? I'll give you an example. What does it mean to be a good American? Now, the truth is, a good American doesn't mean that you're good. Think about it. If you were to talk to a neighbor, secular neighbor, and they were to define for you a good American, they would say a good American doesn't steal, doesn't rob, doesn't rape, doesn't pillage, doesn't cheat, doesn't hurt anyone else. A good American doesn't violate the distancing guidelines or walk out without a mask. A good American. But the truth is, that doesn't actually make a good American. That doesn't make you good. All that means is that you are not bad. To not murder, to not steal, to not cheat, to not take things from other people, to not hurt, damage, or injure, doesn't make you good. All it does is mean that you're not bad. We have an incredibly low standard, and I'm a proud American. I don't mean this in a negative way about America. It's true for almost every country and every legal system and every culture. That to be good is not really to be defined as being good. To be good really is just defined as to not be bad. But my dear friends, that's not good enough for us. We dream and we aspire higher. We want more for ourselves and for our family. It's not enough to not be bad. We push and we demand of ourselves to actually be good. But how do you know what it is to be good? By the way, I'll give you a few practical examples. I can be a good American and you fall in front of me on the street, you drop with a massive heart attack, and I have the knowledge and the ability to save your life and I'm allowed to keep walking. There's nothing in American law which obligates or mandates me to stop and intervene in your life and help you. There's something called the Good Samaritan Law that comes from a book not really, shouldn't be familiar to us, the name of it. But the law really says that if I stop and I give you CPR, and I break three ribs while I'm doing it, in our litigious society, you can't sue me because I was trying to help you. That's what that law says. So the best we can do is have a law that says, I don't have to help you, but if I try to help you, Even though you can sue me on every other time, you can't sue me then. But comes along our Torah HaKadosha, our sacred Torah, and it tells us, somebody's in trouble. You can't walk by. You can't say it doesn't affect me. You can't say it's none of my business and look the other way. You have to stop, you have to help. Doesn't even only apply to a person's life, it applies to their property. Down here we have something called hurricanes. Actually, you've been familiar with them a couple years ago too. You know, when a hurricane warning comes, you got to bring in all the outdoor furniture. You're grateful to have brought it in for nothing if the hurricane passes, but I got to tell you, it's not fun. It's a big pain. Collect all the outdoor furniture. Anything that can become a projectile has to be brought inside. It's a pain. So the halacha is that if my neighbor has outdoor furniture too, and I have the ability to move it, I got to move it for them. My neighbor's object, as the Gemara says, is flowing down the river, and I can return it to them. I can protect it, or the river is overflowing onto their property, and I can take care of them. I have to. Because the Torah pushes us not just to not be a bad person, the Torah teaches us how to, in fact, be good people. You know, the law is, if you have a lost object, finders keepers, losers weepers. But halacha says, no, Hashavas Aveda, if there are simanim, I have to look for you, I have to try to get it back to you, I have to help return it to you. This halacha tells us. But I'll tell you even more basically, the Chazon Ish has a wonderful sefer called Emuna Bitachon. And the truth is, the Sefer Emuna Bitachon is made up of several prakim, and only one perek is about Emuna Bitachon. But that's the most famous perek, and it's the perek that's been translated. But really, the whole sefer, of course, the Chazon Ish's sefer Emuna Bitachon, is a wonderful, wonderful sefer worth reading. And in there, he has a whole chapter, the first chapter on, subsequent chapter on exactly what we're talking about. And the Chazon Ish himself wonders, why learn Torah? What is the purpose? What of its value? Why are we obsessed with it? Why are we spending so much time? Are there any other culture that doesn't just tell legal scholars and legal experts and those who are intrigued by the law to sit and analyze law, but they try to train every young person as they're growing up? You will measure your success, your happiness, your contribution by law. Chazon Ish wonders this question himself, and his answer is eye-opening. It's our fourth reason. We're heading into the home stretch. I know it's getting late. Our fourth 4 out of 5 reasons of why we learn Torah. And the Chazon Ish says the following. If I have a business dilemma, I have an ethical dilemma, I don't know what to do, I don't know what's right, I don't know what's correct, I don't know what's moral, I don't know what's ethical, who should determine what is the answer? Human beings? Democratically, we take a vote? How do we determine what's moral and ethical? And these dilemmas rise, they occur all the time. Ask the Rabbanim who are on this group. I see the great Rav Aryeh Leibowitz, my dear Chaver, and Rebbe, the shilas he deals with, he has the most fascinating, fantastic shilas. The shilas that come up, business ethics and legal ethics and medical ethics right now, particularly medical ethics. Rav Asher Weiss, Hagon Rav Asher Weiss, sent out his article for the week, and it's about, I saw the second half of it is about if someone was contagious with coronavirus and they infected someone else and that person suffered, was injured, even worse as a result, what are you obligated? How are you responsible? So who should determine that? Without our Torah HaKadosha, and without an objective, absolute, infinite God, who determines that? We take some medical ethics experts and we put them in a room and what? They take a vote? And the ones in 2020, what if they think differently than the ones in the year 2000 or 1800 or 1500? Because in different times and at different places, they'll come to different conclusions. And who's right? Who's correct? You understand that when you rely on democratically determined decisions, you can even result in a Nazi Germany and a Nazi party and an extermination and genocide of 6 million people. The Nazis were elected democratically. We embrace democracy. Democracy is wonderful. Democracy is great. And there are elements of democracy even in the development of halacha. But when it comes to such moral and ethical decisions, if you rely exclusively on democracy, on the subjective, on the relative feelings of human beings, how do you know what's true, what's right? How do you know what's just, what's righteous, what's honest? So writes the Chazon Ish, that's why we learn Torah. Because Torah tells us the will of Hashem. Torah tells us, Shnai Mochsen Betalas, two people are holding a talus, and this one says the whole thing belongs to me, and the other one says the whole thing belongs to me. And we don't just go into a room and debate it, and enjoy, and to make a vote. We say, what does the Ribbono Shalom say? This is his world, and these are his talasim, and these are his rules. What is his vision for what's moral and ethical? How we're meant to live our lives? How are we meant to operate in this world? If someone finds a lost object, can you keep it, return it? What are the signs on it? What is the effort you have to go to find its rightful owner? Without Torah, we would approach life's difficult decisions from our limited, finite perspectives, and we would often come to the wrong and unethical conclusions. Says the Chazon Ish, why are we learning Torah? Sections of Torah that don't even relate to us. I'm not a judge. I'm not a member of a Beis Din. I don't know Chush and Mishpat, but I nevertheless going through Baba Metzia, going through Baba Kama, Baba Basar, why? So I understand Masech Shabbos, the Daf Yomi, I have to learn that because every Jew has to observe Shabbos. What am I learning Nezikim for? What am I learning parts of Nashim? You're not a rabbi, you're not a Masada Kedusha. Why am I learning it? Because in every sentence, in every word, in every syllable of Torah is a life lesson, is a moral compass, is an insight and a window into how Hashem wants us to live and operate, to mold and shape His world. Without it, everything is relative. Everything is subjective. Everything is personal. But with our Torah, we have access to the infinite, to the omnipotent, to the absolute truth. And there's nothing more meaningful, more righteous than truth. Reason number five. You know, it's very popular to have book clubs, groups of people who agree to read the same novel or book, and then they get together, they discuss, they analyze, they debate. You might even see in the back of a book that you're reading that the author has suggested questions that the book club should consider when they read his or her Halakha book. So spread are book clubs that authors are already giving the language. They're already ki'ilu participating and stimulating, provoking the book club who will be zeicha to learn to read their book. Book clubs are very popular. The recent amazing Siyum HaShas, and it's hard to believe it was just a few months ago that 50,000 people could sit together in a stadium. But just a few months ago, I saw it was an amazing article in the secular papers that talked about the Daf Yomi is the world's largest book club. Is there a bigger book club across the entire planet than learning the Daf Yomi? Wherever you are, wherever you go in the world as a Jew, and today you have to go there only virtually and over Zoom, but you encounter a number of Jews, they might dress differently and speak a different language and enjoy different foods and have different customs. And yet, if they're learning the Daf, you're literally on the same page as them, wherever you go in the world. Learning Torah is being part of the greatest book club of all time. Because this sacred Torah allows us to not only collect and transcend geographically things that divide others, but we're able to actually transcend time itself. When I'm learning the same Daf Gemara that my great-great-grandfather, my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, and not only that, I'm learning the same Parsha, and I'm learning the same Pirkei Avos, and I'm accessing the same Torah that my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren are going to learn. There's nothing else in our lives that are in common with our great-great-great-great-grandparents and our great-great-great-great-grandchildren. We have nothing else in common with them. Our lives will be so radically different. But Torah gives us that language, and Torah gives us those tools, and Torah gives us that ability to transcend time and to transcend space and geography and to be able to connect with the entire world at once simultaneously. We are part of the world's biggest and the world's best book club. Those that learn it are part of that special community, a sacred trust, an incredible connection. Rabbi Soloveitchik, and I don't have the text in front of me to share with you, but described so beautifully, even when he was older or frail, infirm, even when he was tired and exhausted and fatigued, but he'd open, and his Talmidim described, he would open a Gemara, and Rava and Abai were in the room with him. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were around his table. Rashi and the Rambam, Taisvus, they were all there. Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chaim, they're all there. There is no such thing as time that divides us, and there's no such thing as space that divides us. When we open and learn Torah, we have a means of communicating with every Jew who ever was and every Jew who ever will be. We connect with and we become part of the greatest community, a transcendent community of all time, the world's ultimate book club. So why are we learning Torah? Why is it such a virtue? Why is it such a value? Why do we encourage spending so much time? We saw five reasons. There are so many more than even just these. But I want to end with one last thought. A thought that I try to incorporate into my life. It's very difficult. And I go back to my own education. I had wonderful teachers and role models and mentors. But maybe it was taken for granted. I don't remember it ever being spoken. And that is, you can learn. You can be in yeshiva. And you can be steiging. And the height of your yeshiva experience, maybe it's your gap year after, before, maybe it's your summer, you could be learning 12, 14, 16 hours a day. And you're pouring over Shnai Mikra Lecha Targum, and you're pouring over the Gemara, and the Halacha, and you're pouring over this, and you're pouring over that, and you never mentioned Hashem's name once. You know, even when you're learning Torah, you could sometimes forget that it's meant to draw you closer to Hashem. So beautiful, Pshat from a Chassidish Rebbe. Pasuk says, "Vayikat Yaakov mishnaso vayomer achin yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, ve'anochi lo yadati." Beginning of Parshas Vayetze, Yaakov is on the run, and of course he falls asleep. The stones combine into one. He wakes from his sleep and he says, "Oh, Hashem is here, and I had no idea." And of course, the usual pshat is that Yaakov, who had spent so much time immersed in the ivory tower of Torah, didn't realize that out there in the world, you execute the Torah values, that you can find Hashem in the real world too. But this Chassidish Rebbe teached the pasuk very differently. He said homiletically, "Vayikat Yaakov Mishnaso." The word Mishnaso can mean sleep, but Mishnaso, like Mishnah Torah, Mishnaso can also mean from his learning. He woke up from his learning and he said, "Ha, Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh v'anochi lo yadati." I didn't realize in a Machlokas Rashi Taisvus, in a Ktsais Nesivus, in a Reb Chaim, I didn't realize in the Lamdus that in the Chakira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's here too. Person, a Jew, could spend Shir, you can sit in school, Chumash, Navi, Gemara, Halacha, and you don't realize it's supposed to transform me. It's supposed to mold me. It's supposed to inform me. It's supposed to enrich me. Enrich me. We should never, ever, ever, chas v'shalom, get to a place where v'yikat Yaakov mishnaso. Too many Jews spend too much of their life learning and they say, you know what? But it doesn't speak to me. Well, I see people around me who are so devoted to learning Torah and they cheat me in business, or they're rude or discourteous, or they're not following the guidelines. What's all that Torah worth? And it's a fair question. It's a question about ourselves and a question sometimes about others. We should never get to a place, Vayikat Yaakov Bishnaso. We should never wake up from our learning and say, huh, I didn't know Hashem could be found there. I wish I had spent time finding him there. It said that Rav Kook read that Mishnah Bab Metzia differently. Two are holding a talis. This one says the whole thing belongs to me, and the other one says the whole thing belongs to me. Vakadosh Baruch Hu Omer Yachloku. That even when you learn the Mishnah, you read the Gemara, read in Hashem's name. In every ethical, moral, business, medical dilemma, in the laws of Shabbos, how to do borer and tochein, what I'm allowed or not allowed to do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells me, miyad biyad ochel mitoch psolas. Keep putting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name into Torah. Walk away from that learning experience and say, how am I meant to be different and changed? How have I become a Ben Torah or a Bas Torah of Torah personality? How do I think and approach the world differently after having learned that I did before? It's not just intellectual, it's not academic, it's not abstract, it's not theory. It's supposed to inspire and mold me. How will I be different now that I know that? Whether it's Bab Metzia, whether it's Shabbos, or whether you're learning Zvachim, it doesn't matter what you're learning. Whether it's Halacha, Musar, Chassidus, Chumash, Navi. But how am I different walking out than I was walking in? How does it change me? Kadosh Baruch Hu Omer Yachloku. To never wake up Mishnaso and have say, ah, oh, I didn't know. Really? I went through Gemara Shir for 12 years? I didn't. Hashem was never in my Gemara Shir once. Great Lamdas, great Chakiras, great development of Halacha. But Kadosh Baruch Hu never entered the conversation once. He has to be part of each and every conversation we have. At the beginning of a Chavrusa and at the end of every Shir, to step up and walk away and say, in what way does this leave me closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu? I give us all a bracha that we should be together. I had this chus to speak at DRS once in person. It should be zocha that we should be together again here in South Florida and up there in New York, healthy and happy and holy. I give us a bracha that kol gadol v'lo yasaf should, for all of us, not mean that it happened long ago and it was never repeated, but it should mean it never ended. That each and every day, Kadosh Baruch Hu's infinite voice is reverberating, echoing in our ears and in our hearts and in our souls. It is informing and inspiring. It is enabling us to pull back that mask and to see who we are and who we could be, and to help us become who we're meant to be, the very best versions of ourselves. Wishing everyone a good Shabbos. Wishing everyone a good Yontif, a happy Yom Yerushalayim, Chag Sameach. Thank you so much for this opportunity, and have a great night.